seated, please. The court is ready to hear argument in 070091, Trammell Crowe versus Gutierrez.
An argument for the petitioner. The petitioner has reserved 5 minutes for rebuttal.
Please the court. Wendell Hall and Rosemary Kineski for Texas Central, Trammell Crowe, Texas Central Limited. This case involves a question of liability of Trammell Crowe for the as the property manager for the quarry market in San Antonio for the criminal conduct of a third party on its premises. The 4-3 majority in the court below, the Fourth Court of Appeals, rejects the analytical framework set out in Timberwalk, as well as this court's decision in City of Keller, and imposes a rule of strict liability for premises owners. There are two central issues in this case. First, whether the murder of Luis Gutierrez was similar to the other 10 crimes at issue as defined by this court's decision in Timberwalk. And second, under the applicable standard of review articulated by City of Keller in the previous cases regarding the equal inference rule, whether the circumstances are equally consistent with either of two facts, that is, a robbery or a targeted hit on Luis Gutierrez. Because the circumstantial evidence of a vital fact is meager in this case, that is, the evidence of a robbery, the reviewing court must consider not just favorable evidence, but all the circumstantial evidence and competing inferences, not in isolation, but in light of all the known circumstances. The competing inference to the claim of robbery, again, is a retaliatory hit on Luis Gutierrez because he had become a police informant for the San Antonio Police Department. There's no doubt that the circumstances and inferences will support either the conclusion of a robbery or a reprisal hit, although, as the majority, the dissenting opinion authored by Justices Duncan, Angelini, and Speedland said, the evidence of robbery is at best thin. Because neither fact can be inferred in this case, the jurors are required to guess as to what happened and what the vital facts are, and the jurors are not entitled to guess. Consequently, there's no evidence of a robbery. Without legally sufficient evidence of a robbery, the crime cannot be considered similar as required by Timberwalk.
Was it disputed that Mr. Gutierrez's wallet was taken?
Your Honor, the only evidence about Mr. Gutierrez's wallet was Carol Furman testified that she thought he had taken his wallet to the movie theater. When they left the Regal Cinemas at the Quarry Market, they walked out into the parking lot, they heard a shot, and they turned around. Mr. Gutierrez had been shot once already when he turned around. He was shot three more times, twice in the shoulder, once in the back, and once in the back of the head. He fell to the ground and died. No one ever saw anyone bend over Mr. Gutierrez and take any property from him. No one saw anyone come near Mr. Gutierrez at the parking lot in front of the Regal Cinemas.
But are you saying there was not even a fact issue that there was a robbery?
Your Honor, I don't believe there is because I think the evidence is too meager. I think you have to guess that there might have been a robbery.
But whether it was a robbery or a targeted murder, the plaintiff's theory of the case was that if you'd had more visible security, I assume even people doing targeted murders don't want to get caught. Wouldn't you assume that?
Yes.
These guys apparently didn't because they took off and never came back. And so if you'd had more visible security, what difference does it make whether it was a targeted murder or a robbery?
Well, first of all, the evidence, I suppose, must be conflicting about that because the evidence that I recall is that that at the 12:20 in the morning at the time of this murder, the parking lot at the quarry was almost like daylight because it was so bright. As a matter of fact, the policeman who was a off-duty San Antonio Police Department officer who passed by in an unmarked car in front of the quarry saw the assailant, who was dressed either in a black ski hood or in a black ski mask, and we got about 100 to 200 feet past the theater. That's when the assailant attacked Mr. Gutierrez.
Let me ask you about the security guard. He was an independent contractor, I assume, since
yes.
He was a police officer?
Yes.
Why was he in an unmarked vehicle? Was that because Quarry Market said so, or was that his own decision?
That was the decision of the San Antonio police department officers who were serving as off-duty security for Trammell Crowe. That was their decision, and that's the evidence in the record. That Trammell Crowe provided for the security officers whatever they wanted. The security officers felt like inconspicuous security was much more effective than conspicuous security.
But that was the security officer's decision, not Corey Marcus.
That was the security officer's decision, yes, Your Honor. The majority and the dissent focus on the 10 crimes that occurred in the previous 22 months in this case. Even if you assume that this was, in fact, a robbery, and the dissenting opinion assumes that, and we argued that as well in our brief below and before this court, even if you assume that this was, in fact, a robbery, it is so dissimilar in its character and the way it took place, that there is no way that a reasonable juror could conclude that this was a robbery similar to the other 10 events that occurred at the quarry. There had never been a shot fired at the quarry. No one had ever been seriously injured at the quarry. And certainly no one had ever been shot four times from the back at the quarry, which I think most reasonable people would conclude is probably not the best method or the most likely scenario for a robbery.
Sometimes things go wrong during robberies. I mean, a robbery in itself is a violent crime. Whether someone has a paper bag and says he has a gun in it, giving your money, or whether he shoots you, it's all violence. It's all wrong.
I agree, Your Honor.
I understand Timberwalk, but why all these subtle distinctions? It's not exactly the same, therefore it doesn't apply. If there's evidence in this case that perhaps the wallet was stolen, maybe some jewelry was broken, but maybe it is a hit. You know, I don't know what it was, but there's some evidence, and isn't that enough for the jury to consider?
No, Your Honor, because it has to be more than just meager circumstantial evidence. There's no direct evidence that a wallet was stolen. There is just speculation that a wallet was stolen. Carol Furman testified she thought he had his wallet. There's also testimony that Mr. Gutierrez had several dollars in his front pocket. So it's just as equally likely that Mr. Gutierrez carried his money and his personal belongings in his front pocket and didn't carry a wallet that evening.
Were there others in the vicinity, other patrons in the parking lot?
Yes, Your Honor, there were.
It seems like the more audacious a crime like this with other people around, the less likely security would have made a difference anyway.
Your Honor, that's exactly right, and that's our argument. And I think part of the flaw in the plaintiff's expert's testimony, first of all, he testifies that this was, in fact, a robbery. I don't think an expert can testify that this was a robbery. That's simply a fact question for the jury to determine. He might testify as to proximate cause, whether some sort of level of security or another would have prevented this crime, but I certainly don't think he was capable of testifying about whether this was a robbery or a targeted hit, but yet he nevertheless did testify as to that. But and I think that's the Hobson's choice the security guards at Trammell Crowe were faced with. I can assure you, if they had been in a car with a police department sticker on the side and a flashing yellow light on the roof of the car, it would have given the assailant in this case just as much warning that the police had passed by the front of the theater. Actually, it would have given them better warning and more warning that the police were out of the way and he could commit his crime. But as the police officer testified in this case, his arm was hanging outside the window. He was in his San Antonio Police Department uniform, and his security patch was showing. And he said he made eye contact with these assailants. So whether the off-duty San Antonio Police Department had requested conspicuous security, and the plaintiff's expert in this case suggested a golf cart with a flashing light, whether that was the scenario or whether it was an inconspicuous car with no markings on it, I don't think would have made any difference. And in either circumstance, the assailant certainly could have carried out the crime, and then in either scenario, Trammell Crowe would have been sued for not providing inconspicuous security if they, in fact, had a flashing light. I can certainly see the plaintiffs making the argument that, well, if you would not have that flashing light on top of the car and you'd been inconspicuous, perhaps the assailants wouldn't have seen you, and then you could have caught the criminals. This crime was well set up. The assailants were standing outside the theater waiting for the theater to leave. As soon as they left, as soon as the Gutierrez and Carol Furman left and he was shot and murdered, he ran down a breezeway next to the movie theater into a back parking lot where a waiting car was to pick him up, and they fled the Quarry Shopping Center. As they fled the Quarry Shopping Center, another security guard made chase after them, but several people in the car started shooting back at them, so they stopped their chase, and the car got away, and these assailants were never caught, unfortunately. But it was certainly... There's no indicia in this case that this was a planned robbery. And Justice Medina, as you pointed out earlier, sometimes things do go wrong with robbery. Sometimes someone will come up with a gun in a paper bag or a plastic sack and hold it to you, and there might be a struggle and the gun will go off. Well, that would certainly, to me, indicate a robbery or an assault of some sort. But when someone is shot from quite a distance away, four times in the back, that's not a robbery going wrong. I don't know what it was, and I can't...
You have to find that this was a hit job as a matter of law?
No, Your Honor. No, Your Honor. I don't think you have to. I think with the equal inference rule, if there are equal inferences that this was a robbery or a retaliatory hit, then there's no evidence that it was a robbery, because there is simply no evidence to support a robbery. If there's no evidence to support a robbery, then there is certainly no similarity, and if there is no similarity, then there's no foreseeability, and judgment must be reversed for Trammell Crowe. So absent some sort of similarity of this crime to the other 10 crimes that occurred at the quarry, there's no way to impose liability on Trammell Crowe without simply imposing strict liability on all premises owners. And again, I think this court made clear in Timberwalk what the general rule in the state should be and is, and that is that premises owners are generally not liable for the criminal conduct of third parties, and that makes good sense. I mean, it makes perfect sense, because there's absolutely no way to prevent against all criminal conduct. And until you're on notice of a particular type of crime occurring on your property with some sort of regularity, I don't think you can be held to a standard that you should foresee that particular crime on your premises.
I saw the evidence that the autopsy revealed that the victim was not shot at close range, but I don't know what that means.
That's correct, Your Honor. It's not clear exactly how far he was. He was certainly close enough to get in four good shots.
But how close is close for the autopsy report? Like a few inches or feet or?
Oh, no, Your Honor. I believe it was in excess of 20 feet. It was not close. He was not close to the victim.
Let's assume there's proof that it was an assassination or some kind of hit job. What does a premise owner do in the future to guard against that?
Your Honor, I'm not sure what a premises owner can do. At some point, you simply can't make all premises owners or anyone strictly liable for all crimes that can occur on premises. If this was a targeted hit, and that was, in fact, the law in this case, or if that was a legal conclusion in this case, then I don't think you can ever hold any premises owner liable for targeted hits unless you could somehow show that targeted hits occurred on these premises with frequency. But one or two targeted hits on any property could happen in any city, in any locality. So I don't think that would advance the ball for the plaintiff either. I think what the court may wish to do, and it's difficult to do because I think every single case, every Timberwalk case is going to be very case and fact specific. But I think the language on similarity probably requires some clarification. Obviously, the crimes don't have to be identical, but they're certainly, and as Timberwalk says, they do have to be similar. But what the majority opinion in this case did was jump and hang its hat on the language in Timberwalk in that first sentence that reads, a string of assaults and robberies in an apartment complex make the risk of other violent crimes like murder and rape foreseeable. Well, that may or may not be true, but as Justice Heck wrote in Mellon Mortgage, when the woman was abducted from another location by a police officer and taken to Mellon Mortgage's parking garage, where a rape could be foreseeable in the parking garage, the court held that this particular rape was not foreseeable because of the circumstances surrounding the abduction and rape of this woman at the Mellon Mortgage parking garage. I think similarly in this case, even if the court wanted to conclude that this was some sort of robbery gone bad, it is so dissimilar that it cannot be held, that it cannot be considered similar for purposes of Timberwalk.
Counsel, yes. Assume it's a robbery. What type of evidence do you think of prior incidents at that location may raise the probability that the property owner knew or should have known, that is, answer the foreseeability question and raise a duty?
Raise the duty in this particular case, Your Honor?
No. Assuming this was a robbery, what prior events do you think would have raised a duty?
Additional robberies.
How many?
This
robbery was different. This one was different. This lady was hit on the head, but she wasn't raped. This lady was strangled. I mean, where do you draw the distinction?
No lady was strangled. There were four.
I'm just giving you hypotheticals.
Exactly.
Where do you draw the distinction? Because under your scenario, premises liability owner will never be responsible.
No, I don't think that's true. I think if there was another robbery, for instance, if someone walked up to a person sitting in a car with a gun, knocked on the window and said, get out of your car or I'm going to kill you, and this person was then shot because the person wouldn't get out of the car, I think we'd have a very different fact pattern and Trammell Crow might have a different situation on its hands because there was a similar incident like that on the premises at Trammell Crow.
One similar or several similar incidents?
I think there has to be more than, and here, in this case, there were 10 and 22 months. It's certainly up to this court to determine, but I think there has to be more than just two or three incidents before you can put a premises owner on notice that from that point forward into the future, they have to foresee all that type of crime.
If it were undisputed that this was a robbery, you'd withdraw your similarity argument, right?
No, I wouldn't, Your Honor, because I think it is so different, again, in its character, and that's what the dissenting opinion pointed out below, was that this wasn't a robbery like any other robbery that occurred at the quarry market. Being shot four times from the back, and even if a wallet was stolen, I don't think you can conclude that that was similar enough to the other 10 incidences to put Trammell Crow on notice of this sort of crime.
Mr. Hall, the court is ready to hear argument from the respondents.
May it please the court, Mr. Stevens will present argument for the respondents.
Good morning, Your Honor. At the outset, let me say that if somebody were to draw up a set of facts that would meet the Timberwalk requirements, this would be the case. The Quarry Market Mall was a very, very dangerous place on February 18, 2002. They had 227 crimes. They had 10 robberies, out of which 8 were first-degree felonies. There were 8 people that would have been sentenced to life in the penitentiary for the crimes that they committed. There were a total of 24 personal crimes that had occurred. There was a major crime, as the FBI would classify these 227 crimes, all major crimes, every 3 days. Most of the crimes occurring at night, 75% of the crimes occurring out in the parking lot.
But the difference is, the question in most of the earlier cases was there was no security, evidence of dangerousness, and the argument was they should have had security. These folks did have security.
I disagree with...
In the whole point of Timberwalk, that if it's foreseeable that crimes are going to occur, you need to do something about it, and so they did something about it by hiring security guards. They weren't negligent in hiring security guards.
Now, I factually disagree with you, Judge Brister, and that's the very point. During this two-year period that they had the 227 crimes, they did, in fact, have security. They had the same type of security. And what is so ironic about this particular case is that Nancy Alarcon, who was assaulted in April of 2000, was represented by my law firm. And we sent a detective over 2 weeks before this murder to ask, where was the visible security when Nancy Alarcon was assaulted coming out of the Bed Bath & Beyond, and there's all these crimes. And we get into an argument with the security guard out there, and he says, we don't need visible security out here. And he goes back, and there's a discussion with management. And lo and behold, Luis Gutierrez is murdered and robbed 2 weeks later.
But, I mean, did Quarry Market tell, according to your opposing counsel, Quarry Market never told the off-duty police officers they could or couldn't use unmarked cars. That was the security guard's choice, right?
Your Honor, my memory of the record is that there was a discussion between the security guard and Shirley Shear, who was the manager in charge at that time. And I believe that there's an inference in the record that there was a discussion about money, about whether we're going to pay for the security. And they chose to put bicycles out there because they felt bicycles was visible enough. And it would also, ironically...
Let's don't beat around. I mean, that's all interesting. We're not talking about bicycles. Question: in Fifth Club, we said, police officer, off-duty police officer, independent contractor, does something that's wrong that causes a death or a serious injury. The question is, did the landowner control that choice? Did they have an actual or contractual right to control? So, was it Quarry Market that said, use unmarked police cars, or was this something that the police officers decided?
It's our position, Your Honor, that the Quarry Market undisputedly said in this record that they had the right to control security, that they were responsible for security, that is undisputed in this record. That's what the evidence is.
Now, that's a great answer. Now, my question is the unmarked vehicles. Yes, they could have fired them all. So in that sense, they had the right to control. But who had the right to choose? Contractual, that means you've got some contract evidence that says we're going to say what you ride around in. Or actual, which is that some discussion or some direction by the landowner that told them, use unmarked cars. Which in this case was it regarding unmarked cars? Was it contractual or actual control?
Your Honor, again, I know the point that you're driving at, and certainly Larry Price had the right to some input there. Certainly he did. He was the guy that was the off-duty police officer that was basically in charge of the security.
He was an independent contractor.
And he was an independent contractor in that sense, but still, Your Honor, when it comes to the right to control, it's our position that management knew and did have the right to control the choices that were made by their independent contractors.
But you don't have, that wasn't, you won't tell me whether that was contractual or actual control.
Again, Your Honor, I think that the record would probably support both. I believe that there is a contract in evidence in this case that gives Trammell Crow the right to control the security. I don't know as I sit here what it says about the details, but I believe that also in actual practice, that I believe that there's some evidence in the record to support that Quarry Market had the right to control details.
Let me ask you, we know what happens out there, but we don't really know why. At least we're not sure. Would you agree, though, that if this man was assassinated, that you lose? It's proved that...
I would agree that on the issue of duty, that if they conclusively proved, and that's the key word there, they conclusively proved it, that they don't owe a duty.
We know that he was assassinated. Okay, then you would lose this case if that were the case. You only win if there's a robbery, some other reason other than assassination, correct?
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay, and so we know that there's been talk about the wallet is there, not there, whatever. And the existence or not existence of the wallet is speculation?
No, sir, I disagree.
And did anybody actually see the wallet?
Yes, Your Honor, and just to clarify the record in that respect, there wasn't a belief or a thought by Carol Furman. It was, the testimony is on page 43 of her deposition, or of her trial transcript, I'm sorry. Question, you did not see a wallet on Lewis that night? I did. Question, and you stated today earlier you believed that Lewis pulled out a wallet and paid for the tickets. No, he had the wallet. So there is no question on this record. The jury had facts which they could infer in our favor. He had the wallet.
Okay, so there's testimony that he had a wallet before the shooting, and afterwards there wasn't a wallet on his body.
Yes, sir.
Is there any other evidence of robbery in this particular case?
Yes, there is, Your Honor. Not only is the wallet missing, the chain of custody has never been broken, and if we look at the record, the wallet had his driver's license in it. It had his ID cards in it.
No, that's not my question. What is the, other than the wallet, what is the evidence of robbery?
The bracelet that he had on his right hand was broken and found and recovered at the scene. It was not missing at the scene, as said in their transcript. It was actually recovered at the scene and checked into the police property room, suggesting a struggle. Instead of the shots all fired in the back, there is one shot that is actually fired into the shoulder laterally instead of in the back. There is
and that demonstrates robbery?
Yeah, it's consistent with the inference. We can't look at one fact alone, but if we look at the totality of those facts, missing wallet, struggle at the scene, the shots are not close range, there's no indication he's actually execution style, as they suggest. That's not what's in there. If you look at all of that, that's very consistent. In fact, it's a mirror image of that U.S. Marine that was attacked walking out of the movie theater not too long before.
Well, we're getting astray from my question. Anything other than that to support robbery?
There's testimony of a criminologist who spent 30 or 40 years that says, yes, as a matter of fact, it is a robbery because the wallet is missing.
Okay, but that's just on the basis of the absence of the wallet. Now, the other thing I'm wondering about is it was raised earlier, what is, by the Chief Justice, what is a property owner to do to protect itself from an assassination scenario like this and liability that might accrue? Would a property owner be required in a situation like this to actually catch the culprit and bring him in and make them testify? So yes, I was committing an assassination, it wasn't a robbery. Is that what they have to do?
No, sir, Your Honor. And we are not advocating strict liability in Texas for property owners for assassins, not in the slightest. But again, that's the beauty of our Texas juries, is they are uniquely qualified to listen to all of these issues that we're talking about today.
But we have, in Texas, you know, there, when this occurred, the concealed weapons law passed, isn't that right? So, and there were other people in the vicinity, in the parking lot, correct? So why would they assume that they could get away with this in a crowd any more, you know, with or without visible security there? I mean, it seems to me like this is such an audacious criminal act that, I mean, I just don't see, and maybe there's a fact issue here, but I don't see how, you know, a flashing light or a golf cart would have deterred this activity, whether it was a robbery or it was an assassination.
That's a point well taken, Your Honor, and the facts are this was a 12 o'clock movie that they had come out of. There wasn't a huge crowd. There were not all that many people around. And it's, again, similar to the U.S. Marine attack that they came out and without any reason they come up and start beating on this guy. And that's the very problem with, and it's the reason we say liabilities here. We know that when you have such a large number of property criminals. It's not just the number of the criminals. What happens there is that people, as they start turning wicked, we know that instead of just property, these same people become hardened criminals, and they're attracting dangerous criminals out here to this scene. And so we know that criminals that are dangerous people are going to commit these types of acts. And
how
we're not saying
how are they attracting people to this scene? By the lack of security, or
that's a great point, Your Honor. This the Quarter Market Mall, I'm sure we all know, is one of the best malls there in San Antonio, and it's at least on the outside, and it's got lots of money going in. It's got Bed Bath & Beyond. It's got P.F. Chang's. It's got the theater. And if you're a criminal and you're thinking like a criminal and you're going to make a hit or you're going to make a robbery, that's the place to go.
Is it a matter of only a wallet is stolen? Do you have to have a robbery? Do you have to have steal a wallet and a car to make it a real robbery? Or is it just a wallet? Or does it matter?
It doesn't matter, Your Honor. And I think that every opinion that's been written by this court recognizes that it's the violence that people are concerned about. The law is that it only has to be the general danger that the property owner has to foresee. It just so happens here that the 10 crimes that we are citing as similar happen to be robberies. We can look at Justice Heck's opinions, like in the Mellon case in that garage. I don't think there had been any personal crimes in the garage at all. This court has never required what they are now advocating, if you listen really to their argument, is you're entitled to the one free murder rule as a property owner. And that is not the degree of similarity that this court or any court has required in the entire United States. That's a ridiculous requirement, respectfully, to impose upon a victim to meet before they have a right to justice.
Well, counsel, that is the question. What's the right thing to do here? These cases and under the Timberwalk rubric raise difficult issues of the state's obligation to police a property versus a private property owner's liability to persons who may be injured on that property and where you draw the line. In this common law area of the law, there are policy issues that we have to take a look at and decide if there's a duty here. That's what we're talking about. You're talking about the jury being uniquely qualified, but the jury didn't make the determination of duty. That's a separate issue. That's a legal issue here. And you think these 10 prior robberies were sufficiently similar to get to satisfy the foreseeability requirement in Timberwalk? None of them, as I understand, involved shootings.
Yes, Your Honor, and that's a very fair concern. And my answer to that is this case meets the classic Timberwalk factors. And that is an outstanding opinion, and this case meets those requirements. We've got the similarity. We've got more similarity in this case than any case in the history of Texas jurisprudence. We've got more crimes on property than any case in the history of Texas jurisprudence.
Okay, I heard you when you said that when you started. What are the similar crimes here?
The other...
Are the 10 robberies?
The 10 robberies are similar, and it's my belief that if we look at the other cases decided by this court, the other 14 personal crimes on top of the robberies are similar enough for this property owner, with the remaining factors of Timberwalk coupled in there, to have the duty. There's 14 more personal crimes on property. And so we've got that, and then considering the similarity of the really identical, sufficiently similar robberies, all of those occurring in the parking lot, occurring at night, occurring unprovoked attacks, occurring with deadly weapons. We're talking Uzis.
Back to my control question. The reason you hire an independent contractor is because they know more about security than you do. At least that's the presumption in the law. And so no question if you can negligently hire an independent contractor. If you hire somebody that you know is not going to do a good job, people are going to get hurt. So you hire an independent contractor, and people start getting robbed. and you call them in and you say, you know, we're concerned, people getting robbed, and they say, but no, this is the way we need to do it. Are you negligent then if you don't fire them?
Well,
you continue to rely, you know, how many robberies have to happen? Surely not one or two. Surely you're entitled to rely on somebody's expertise after you hired them as well as before as to whether you need to change. Your position is after 10, though, they should have fired them because they weren't?
Yes, sir, Your Honor, and we also need to look at the degree of expertise of this property owner. I mean, we're talking about Trammell Crowe. We're not talking about Joe's Bar down the street. And Trammell Crowe had a
professional. Well, independent contractor law, though, applies to grandma next door as well as Trammell Crowe. And the question is not, is whether they were negligent. Was this that ordinarily prudent person standard, ordinarily prudent landowner standard? And so, but you think they were negligent for not, of course, the problem with firing, I mean, everybody uses off-duty police officers for security, for good reason, because they can pack heat and all kinds of things, training. And if you fire them, who are you going to hire?
And I hear your point, Judge Brister, but in connection with this case, I don't think it would take anybody but a reasonable person to realize once you've got this level of crime, these number of similar crimes, these kind of dangerous crimes, if you've got a contractor that's not cleaning up the situation, we got a dangerous situation, you ought to realize as a reasonable property owner, they're not doing the job right.
So San Antonio police officers aren't good enough. We got to bring in Blackwater to protect the quarry market under these conditions?
Well, police officers try to do a good job, and they don't have to be perfect, but they have to do reasonable jobs in connection with the work that they're hired to do. And if you've got this level of crime.
You've argued that perhaps they did it the wrong way in not being identifiable. They're unmarked cars and so forth. And Mr. Hall suggested that, you know, if they had been in the marked vehicle with orange flashing lights and so forth and driving around, that if the same thing had occurred, that the assailants in this particular case waited until the officers went around the corner and then committed this robbery or whatever kind of assault it was, that you'd be in here arguing that they did it the wrong way. They should have been in unmarked vehicles so that they couldn't be seen to stop this sort of activity. How do you respond to that?
Yes, I would respond by saying that their expert, Merlin Moore, who this court has heard Merlin Moore's name more than mine, admitted on the witness stand that if they had visible security there at the movie theater that night, the only place open at the mall, this would not have occurred even with a reprisal-type killing. And that is their expert paid $40,000 or $50,000 in this case.
What are we going to do then when in the next case all the security is provided? You've got someone in a Walmart little golf cart running around in this blue light. You've got an unmarked car. You've got a guy on a horseback. And as much as we try, as much as the premises owners try, we still can't protect the general citizen from these blood-sucking vermin that are going to commit crime no matter what happens. Where does the standard shift then? They've done everything, and yet a heinous crime is still committed. Is there going to be more security required?
We're not advocating strict liability. We're asking for reasonable efforts. And in that scenario, if they had the flashing lights and they had taken reasonable measures, that's all they need to do. But here they had taken none. They were under the radar, and they could not be seen out there. And we take issue with his accusation that the assailant saw this particular officer. That was hotly disputed. Nobody knows where that assailant came from.
So it sounds like you would then concede that if there was visible security on the premises and the unfortunate murder still occurred, then there would be no duty.
That's correct. If it was
liability.
No liability, Your Honor. If it was readily visible, we're not talking some bicycle you can barely see, but as George Kirkham said, they stick out like a sore thumb, like we see at the Walmart and so forth. That would be sufficient for a property owner, sure.
Going back to your exchange with Justice Green earlier, I'm not trying to get you to concede anything at all, but he seemed to ask you that if you agree this was an assassination and not a robbery gone bad, that you would lose. And you seem to agree with that. I just want to see if you needed to clarify that or expand on that, but that you only win if it's a robbery.
Yes, and thank you, Your Honor. As you guys wrote in, I think it's the Vaughn case, there was an issue in the courts of intermediate appeals whether or not who had the burden on superseding cause, and Justice O'Neill clarified that and said if they have the burden to conclusively prove as a matter of law it was a superseding cause or here a target hit. And Mr. Hall, to his credit, he readily admits we do not have a case where we can show it was a targeted hit as a matter of law. And he also, to his credit, admits that we've got a jury question on robberies. I thought I heard him say it's a fact question. And that's what the conflicting inference rule says, is that, like in Lozano, if you've got a question of motive, like in Lozano, who tore down the posters? We knew who tore down the posters, but why did they tear them down? They tear them down because they were embarrassed or because they had a reason to hide the children. Court said that is for the jury to decide on the motive. And we clearly have, in this case, stolen.
Any further questions? Thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. Hall, he says that your expert admitted if you'd had uniformed officers at the site that this would not have happened. What's your position on that?
Your Honor, Shirley Sheard testified, who worked for Trammell Crowe, that she asked these off-duty officers what did they want, and we provided them whatever they wanted to use to protect Trammell Crowe's, or to protect the quarry market. The police officers said they wanted bicycles and to be on foot, primarily in the daytime, because the traffic at the quarry is so heavy that if you're in a car and you see some crime occur, you can't get to it because you're literally locked in by all the cars. And then at nighttime, they wanted to be in cars because there was much less traffic and they could move around freely. So
what I was going to is this.
I'm sorry.
Even if you have police officers out there, there's going to be some crime. It would seem reasonable to there would be some crime.
Absolutely.
Now, my question was this. As I understand opposing counsel's position, your expert testified that cause in fact, your expert testified, even if you'd had them out there if you'd had them out there in uniform in place, this would not have occurred. Is that, do you agree with that?
No, they did not testify to that. Okay. There was a security officer employed by the theater who was there. I think he was inside the theater at the time, separately employed by the Regal Cinemas.
How do we know then, if they'd had uniformed security officers out there, that this would not have happened anyway? It seems to me like that's a causation question. How do you prevent all the crime all the time?
Absolutely, Your Honor. It is a causation question, and fortunately, I don't think this court has to reach causation because I think this case falls on foreseeability. Unfortunately, there is a lot of crime nowadays. When you call about your car being broken in, you can barely get the police to come and take a report because the amount of crime in every city and every part of this country is just skyrocketing. At the quarry, he described it as an extremely dangerous place. The statistics at trial were that the likelihood of a crime at the quarry were 1.7 million to 1, whereas in the city of San Antonio, it's 50,000 to 1. So the likelihood of being a victim of crime at the quarry, I'd much rather be at the quarry than in the city of San Antonio.
Well, you got to break those statistics down to the area you're talking about. You're talking about the general area of San Antonio as opposed to a little isolated area. What about the 227 cases involving 8 felonies and 24 personal crimes?
Your Honor, those are exaggerated by my opposing counsel. There were 227 crimes, things like cars that were broken into when no one was present, as occurs at every single shopping mall in this country, whether it's at La Quintera, Barton Creek Mall, or any other Highland Park Mall, whatever. That occurs at shopping centers routinely.
One thing that I'm confused about is this case about duty or is it about breach?
I believe it's about duty, Your Honor. I don't think breach...
And this follows up on Justice Brewster's question. It seems that if you've got a high number of crimes, I mean, you wouldn't contest that Trammell Crowe had a duty to provide security at the mall.
Correct.
So there's a duty there to provide security. It seems to me then the question goes to was the duty to provide reasonable security breached?
No, I think the duty issue, Your Honor, is was this crime foreseeable?
That's the first duty issue, is to could Trammell Crowe foresee this particular crime? If we could not foresee this particular crime under the Timberwalk analysis, then there is no foreseeability and there is no duty. The other additional comments that that I wanted to address was that there was that these 10 crimes were similar to the crime in this case. In fact, these crimes were not similar at all. As we've discussed ad nauseum this morning, no one else was ever shot, no one else was ever seriously injured, and certainly no one else was shot four times from the back. So even if we give them the fact, which I don't think you can do under the equal inference rule, that this was a robbery, it was so different in nature and character that it was not similar under Timberwalk. Therefore, it was not foreseeable, and therefore Trammell Crowe had no duty in this particular case.
And you admit, Mr. Hall, that it was a jury question whether or not this was a robbery or something else, but the evidence was too meager to raise a fact issue on that.
That's correct, Your Honor. And no jury question was submitted to the jury asking whether this was a robbery. It was a broad negligence question.
There was no specific robbery.
Any further questions?
Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you, Counselor. The cause is submitted, and that concludes the arguments for this morning. The marshal will adjourn the court.
Rise. Oyez, oyez, oyez. The Honorable Supreme Court of Texas now stands adjourned.